I'm Louis Mason, works of the Proud Wetlands.
We build up the gavel, but hey, I'm going to call the meeting in order. This is the Orange County's finance committee meeting. Can we please, I'm sorry, I'm picking up a lot of audio from the room. Can you hear me okay?
Director Yeo, we're having trouble hearing you. Can you hear us okay?
Can you hear me okay?
It's been a week.
It's probably my microphone. Let me see if I can switch to a different microphone. Is this better?
Speak to make sure. Roger, sometimes if you turn up your video, you get more power from the.
Letitia, can you say something?
Is this better?
I can hear Director Yeo well, but he sounds choppy. Okay.
Okay, let's give it a try. Is this better? I'm sorry.
That's a little better.
Okay, I'll speak a little louder. How's that? Okay, thank you. So I'm going to call the Orange County Water District's Admin Finance Issue Committee meeting to order. Today is March 9th, 2023, and can we please have a roll call?
Roll call, Director Yeo.
Present.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Mesquite.
Yes.
Director Meeks. Director Whitaker.
Yeah.
Director Rowe.
Here.
Yes. Director Bilodeau. Director Sheldon.
Here.
Director Tran. Director Green. You do have a
form. Thank you, Christina. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized, Mr. General Manager?
There are none.
Okay, thank you. So this is the time for the public's members of the public to provide comments to the Board of Directors. Comment can be up to 3 minutes long and can address any topics related to the district subject matter jurisdiction. Do we have any participation from the members of the public?
I don't see any hands raised.
Okay, thank you. So let's go on to our business. First, we have the consent calendar. It consists of items 1 through 4. Does anyone wish, any of the committee members wish to remove any items for discussion? Okay, seeing and hearing none. May I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, so I have a motion from Director Mesquite and
I'll second Director Whitaker.
Second from Director Whitaker. Thank you. Roll call.
Roll call, Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Mesquite.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Rowe.
Yes.
Director Sheldon.
Yes.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 5, proposed fiscal year 2023-24 budget replacement and refurbishment fund expenditure review. Mr. General Manager.
Yes, I think that looking around the room.
Randy.
Randy.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's have the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. This morning, I started the budget meetings. So this morning, we're talking about the refurbishment replacement budget. So here's our budget calendar. You've seen this a couple times already. Last Wednesday in the board meeting, we reviewed the budget, the total budget. And yesterday, John went over the water fund budget. And this morning, we're reviewing the R&R budget. We'll have a few more budget meetings to review components of the budget at WIC and admin in April. And then the second board meeting in April, we'll have a public hearing to set the RNPP in consideration to approve the fiscal year ending 2024 budget. here's the pie chart that was shown. These are the seven expenditures categories that we'll have for next year's budget. And today we're focusing on the R&R expenditures of $15.5 million. So with the R&R fund for next year, we'll have annual contributions of $25 million into the fund. And then expenditures, as I mentioned, are $15.5 million planned out of the fund next year. You can see by the bar chart to the right that our expenditures vary quite a bit from year to year, depending on what's happening at the district. The fund was established almost 25 years ago in 1998. It provides for upkeep of the existing infrastructure that the district has, including certain equipment. District annually transfers in money into the R&R fund, and next year it's planned at $25 million. And as I mentioned earlier, that the funds vary pretty dramatically from year to year, depending on what's going on. And with the R&R fund, rate spikes can be avoided to the RA. And as I mentioned, we have expenditures of $15.5 million, and there's 41 different line items in that budget, and it's in your packet. And with that, we'll go over the five larger projects, and I'll have Mabel then present those items, as they're all under his direction.
Right, so we'll present a series of items, highlight some of the ones that are larger in expenditure costs in the proposed RA for next year, or R&R fund for next year. The first one is replacement of RO membranes. The reason for this is we do have one train or three 5 MGD units of RO membranes that have been installed quite a bit time ago, 6 years ago, what we call the train E. They contain certain style membrane that's reached the end of its life. And the reason we believe end of its life is it's got sustained high pressure, so it costs more to run these trains. The trains run shorter in between full chemical cleaning, so they foul faster. So they've reached towards the end of their life and they started to lose some of their salt and contaminant rejection. And then we have two other trains or six other 5 MGD units that were actually installed as part of the initial expansion back in 2015. So they're almost 8 years old, but they're a little bit of an anomaly in that they're still running pretty well, but we're starting to see some deterioration, especially in what we call the third stage or the latter stages of the membrane that do see the dirtiest amount of feed water. So we want to propose a replacement for those six units as well. And all nine of these units, 5 MGD units, would be proposed to be replaced in fiscal year 23-24 under the R&R program. And when we do the RO membrane replacements, the labor is all done in-house by the operators. So this is mainly the cost of buying the membranes and having them shipped, depending upon which manufacturer we go with. We have a cost estimate here of $5.25 million for this item. Then we'll go on to our next item here. So this is a what we call a carryover item. This has been in the R&R budget, but we're proposing to actually start the work in earnest in fiscal year 23-24. This is what we call our RO-CIP piping system, or our clean-in-place piping system. The original GWRS project, when it was constructed in 2008, consisted of a large diameter PVC pipe network that sits mainly in the basement or the tunnels inside the RO process buildings. Most people don't see it, but this piping is important for conveying all the cleaning chemicals to and from the cleaning skids and to the membranes and individual RO units for cleaning. A lot of it was made out of a large diameter PVC Schedule 80 plastic pipe. Essentially, you see a picture of one of the pipe networks on the left there. And a lot of that pipe network has had failures over the years, mainly due to age, but also because of some of the installation methods. There's a lot of pipe strain on a lot of the sections here. There's some areas here where we see a lot of failures at the flanges themselves. So We've proposed to replace key sections of this whole piping network from PVC to stainless steel, 316 stainless steel, which we believe will not only have better corrosion protection, but also prevent some of these strain fractures that we're seeing in some of these joints and sections that are under the most pipe strain because of the way they were configured around the whole piping gallery. So this project we're proposing, it's about $1.5 million, and we'll be seeking some bids from three contractors that we know that are interested that can do this type of work. There'll be a lot of pipe fabrication done offsite, but this project is going to be pretty labor intensive because all of the work is done underneath the trenches. So there'll be a lot of work going in and out of the trenches, and we'll have to secure parts of the walkway in the building to do this work. But we have some contractors very interested in bidding it. So we'll be going out for bids and working with our engineering group on this one and try to get this done in stages in a way that it doesn't affect the overall RO system operation, try to do it in sections and get it all done. The next one here, this is the replacement of membranes in one cell. For those who might not be familiar, our microfiltration system consists now of 48 individual below grade concrete basins, or what we call cells. They have a combination of different styles of membranes, all from a company called MEMCOR, for which we have a long-term service and operating agreement with. One of the cells, which we call cell EO3, actually contains PVDF, or the newer material membrane that was installed as part of the GWS final expansion. But those who were on the board a few years ago, back in 2019, cells, what we call cells 3 and 4, were part of a demonstration test. That was a test where we installed this new style PVDF membrane in two of the existing cells at the time as a long-term trial to figure out whether the PVDF products would be a good fit for the final expansion, knowing that the final expansion water quality would be different than the water quality of the original GWS. It had higher organics, higher salinity, harder to treat water. So in that trial, we ran two of these cells with a PVDF product. And this particular one, in addition to the one that was already replaced in this fiscal year, this one has never been replaced. It's not that old. It's about 4 years old, going on to 5. But as part of that demonstration, both cells were run through a series of cleaning trials, operational trials, run at different flow set points, all in an attempt to figure out what was the optimal flow set point and cleaning regime for the final expansion. So they weren't run in the normal fashion. They were kind of put through the ringer a little bit. So this one, we want to preemptively try to change that out. That way we'll have all new PVDF membranes in both, in two of our trains, the ones that were installed as part of the final expansion. Everything will have a uniform aging. It'll be easier for us to keep track of the long-term life and the cleaning regimes on both. So this is a since it's made by MEMCOR, just like all of our MEMCOR membranes, these are made in Australia. So the cost here at $700,000 includes the cost of the modules at what we think the current price is, plus the shipping and freight from coming from Australia. And we just are in the process of doing in the current fiscal year a 15 cell replacement. So next year it'll just be one cell and it'll be this one here.
And well, what's PVDF mean?
Yes, that's polyvinylidene fluoride. So it's a similar polymer material to the existing, which are polypropylene, but this particular material is resistant to strong oxidants. So it can be cleaned with free chlorine, hydrogen peroxide at high concentrations, which allows it to have a more effective clean. And then the way this material is made, it's another reason we put a final expansion, is it has more pores or higher porosity, meaning you can put more water through, higher throughput through this membrane and clean it stronger. But we don't have a lot of experience with it. So we are getting some experience now as part of the final expansion. And if these membranes run well in the new trains that were just constructed as part of the final expansion, we'll consider a retrofit of all the existing polypropylene membranes to PVDF in the future.
And those two cells that we pilot tested back 4 years ago, they were from different manufacturers. So one was from Sinor and one was from MEMCOR. We wanted to try to see which one operated the best, had the lowest overall operating cost, and proved out that MEMCOR was the lowest cost alternative. So that's why we're moving forward with the MEMCOR PVDF.
Is it cheaper than what we had? Or is it more, how much more expensive?
They're more expensive, but we're seeing that as the market's going towards PVDF, the PVDF product probably in the future is going to end up being cheaper.
Right.
So that'd be another driver for us to consider a retrofit, but we want to still evaluate how well it works on the new water quality as compared to the existing polypropylene product we've had since 2008, the original PWS.
We're probably one of very few plants that still use polypropylene.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, as Mabel mentioned, both Memcorp PVDF and the polypropylene are manufactured in Australia. And when we order the polypros for replacement, they have to shut their factory down.
Oh.
So that they can kind of retool and reproduce and follow the program for us.
Uh-huh.
So as Mabel said, in the future, and these should work better against the poor quality water also. I think we've done some testing on that, and that has proved out. So I could see moving forward in the future gradually as we replace polypropylene membranes, maybe replace them with PVDF. There's some minor piping that would have to be done. There are some changes because they have these maintenance washes. But that kind of is a long-term strategy that we're looking at, I would say. Do you agree, Matt?
That is definitely a long-term strategy. We're hoping to learn a lot from new cells we just built. And if, like Mike said, that strategy would serve us well in the future with some minor piping retrofit, and then our in-house programmers can reprogram those cells to accommodate this membrane uses a different cleaning regime, but that can all be done in-house.
In fact, we did that with two existing, in preparation for these two cells, we did all the work internally, the piping modifications, the programming, and everything else to run the test on this. The interesting thing is each different microfiltration manufacturer has a different configuration.
Of course.
So those membrane modules that you see, the white vertical tubes, they look like tubes, are of a certain dimension that only fit our existing equipment. Now, the patent ran out for Memcor, and that's why Sinor, Chinese firm, came in and they replicated.
Uh-huh.
So that allowed us to do the side-by-side testing. But so far, Mingle, are they the only ones that have tried to get into that aftermarket?
Right. And although they also use a PVDF product, every company also has a slightly different chemical formulation on how they make the PVDF membrane. And that's why it was important pilot test, because not all PVDF is going to run the same depending on the water quality. Okay, so the next two projects don't have anything to do with GWS, essentially. So we'll go into those two. So the first project here, this is another one that we've already started some work in the current fiscal year, but it'll continue into the next fiscal year. So those of you who may remember at our Santiago pits or our Santiago basins, in Bond Basin itself, the lower basin, there's a floating pump station. So this floating pump station allows us to dewater the basin or pump that flow into Santiago Creek and potentially to one other location. This floating pump station, the way it was designed, is two vertical turbine pumps out on a floating barge, and they're connected to the shore by the large discharge pipe you see in the middle on the top picture, big HDPE, the large diameter pipe, and two floating cables. Those cables run all of the conduit wiring that run the pump station barge itself onto an electrical station on shore. They're tethered on the shore, and then they're floated in the basin itself. With, you can kind of see the little floats there that are red on the top picture, go all the way to the barge. What's happened over time is those floats have failed for whatever reason. They filled with water and the cable started to sink. And in the process of sinking, it's actually pulled the terminations out of the anchor on shore in one of the splices and rendered the pumps inoperable, or at least in the, if we were to operate them, we'd risk damaging the electrical equipment on shore because the cables don't conduct a current properly, or they don't measure properly. So we haven't been running that pump station. So we've been working with engineering and with a couple of consulting firms to look at some possible solutions to refloat the existing tethers, get the cable back up. Probably have to pull new cable, which is going to be a big project in and of itself. we likely need some kind of barge system to do it, but we want to look at all those options. And then originally, even without the cable issues themselves, we did want to reconfigure some of the piping and some of the electrical in the pump station, the electrical room itself, because currently the way the pump station is designed and the way the pumps are set up, we can't pump when the basin's at its upper limits. We don't get good efficiency to pump down the basin. And you can see there between 240-foot elevation and 286-foot elevation, we essentially can't really pump using this pump station. It's off the pump curve itself. But we have some modifications we can do to allow that to occur. It's a rare occasion that you need to pump at that level. This year would be one. It's when it's super, super full. But that's part of what we also want to address. But the main issue is to try to figure out a way to get this cable refloated, re-terminated, even if it means pulling cable, and figure out how to do that. But this is a kind of a unique one because it's almost a marine condition or marine construction in a basin that's in, you know, the middle of the inland. So it's not like it's offshore, but some of the same technologies maybe we'll have to look at. So we're going to work with engineering and a consultant that we have to try to figure out some solutions. And this cost here at $3.5 million, essentially the 24,000 is kind of the staff labor is to for the full actual project itself, assuming we can find a solution that's agreeable to doing this. That's what this comes in. The last one here, this is a replacement of an existing excavator out of four bay. So I think we've mentioned this in the past, but we have what's considered an off-road diesel fleet. And because of that, the size of it, we're regulated by the California Air Resources Board and the amount of emissions that we can put out on all of our off-road diesel equipment. So over time, in order to become compliant with CARB or California Air Resources Board emissions requirements, we need to retire equipment that puts out high emissions. And by that, I mean older engines, just like older cars. They put out more particulates than newer, and engines are rated in tiers, going from tier zero on up to tier four, and eventually there'll be a tier five that some manufacturers will make as well. This excavator is a tier two engine, built in 2005. It also has sustained some flood damage after being partially submerged when working out at Prado, so it's got some other issues, but the main reason it requires replacement beyond all that and the age is that we want to get this one out of our fleet, bring in a new one that puts out with a tier four engine, one that has less emissions, that allows us to get back closer into compliance. So every year you'll see that we bring one or two pieces of heavy equipment to try to eventually phase out all of the older equipment and bring in newer equipment that has lower emission engines and get us under the CARB compliance requirements. We're currently in our current compliance, but this is part of a long-term strategy to make sure we stay in compliance, especially through the end of 2023 when the regulations are going to change and become even more strict. So this is all part of that. And we estimate the replacement of this excavator at $500,000. And this excavator is used for a variety of things, especially for helping to clean out vegetation at Prado, clean out vegetation in the river, helping to clean basins themselves when we do formal cleaning. It's a really handy tool for almost all of the recharge facilities, both at Prado and in the Four Bay recharge system itself.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Go ahead, Director Shelton.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah. Randy.
Randy.
He's the money man. More comprehensive. I appreciate this presentation. Just on all the equipment we're looking at, all the costs involved, what is the exact time frame on how and when we have to do this?
Yeah.
And if we did something like that, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I think one more implemented.
Would it be okay if we gave that presentation next month?
I was hoping to get tomorrow.
We'll see what we
can. That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mayhall, is this the end of your presentation? Or?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, are there any comments or questions for the staff?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Director Whitaker.
Thanks. At a recent conference, there was much talk about upcoming requirements to go electric, even with heavy equipment. And there was much consternation there by people who have job to do maybe during emergencies, and the ability to power electrical equipment is going to be minimal. We aren't being affected yet by any of that.
Yeah, so we're looking at some of those new regulations. The district's actually working with Aqua too to formally make comments on some of them. I think in the near term, it more affects regular fleet vehicles, pickup trucks, pool cars, that at some point, 50% of your fleet going forward will have to be electric. They haven't quite, the regulations haven't quite required it for heavy equipment, but it's coming. But the big issue is no one makes full electric on a lot of this heavy equipment. And even on some of the larger pickups, you know, like a consider heavy duty pickup, like a Ford F-450, 550, they don't even come in an electric version. So the regulations are supposed to allow for exemptions, but everyone's looking at what is the exemption process. Because in the past, California Air Resources Board has not been good at giving exemptions or giving good directions on how to get exemptions. And so it's been a difficult process. It's not just us, it's all public fleets. And even in the private sector, they're talking about drayage, or you know, the trucks that are used to take freight from the ports being electric or partially electric. And that doesn't really exist yet either. And that could have a big effect on shipping and the economy as well. So these are all things that I think everyone's concerned about going forward. But our biggest concern right now is the heavy equipment. But it's, you know, like you were saying, it's not going in a direction of full electric just yet, just getting to tier engine. And these tier four that we call them, especially in the bulldozers that we buy, they are partially electric in that a lot of the control equipment's electric. There used to be hydraulic and diesel. And that's been the way that people like Caterpillar have been able to produce a tier four engine on some of the heavy.
You know, lack of availability doesn't often slow the regulator.
They believe
that they drive technology to such requirements. Right. Oh, thanks. I was wondering about that, even with that.
And we have brought on board a consultant that's been kind of helping us try to piece through, because it is complicated and have similar concerns. And so they're working with some other public agencies as well to try to help us all figure out how to stay in compliance.
Thanks. Chairman, you know, I have a question on the heavy equipment we're replacing. Have you started any grant funding in QMD? So you have like the car warrior program.
Yeah, we've looked and it's been difficult to qualify. We are actually looking with our consultant too to see if there's something that we can qualify for. It's been very difficult to even get our foot in the door on any of it.
All right, I sit on the MSRC Academy that actually gives the money out.
Yeah,
of course, you accuse myself when I was giving them. They have a lot of money to give out to a lot of trash companies, private companies,
big fleets,
but a lot of cities get it as well. So certainly be eligible.
Okay. Thank you, Director Whitaker, for your comment. And thank you, Director Bilodeau, for volunteering yourself to help us get some grants. So, yes, Mayho, I have a question. So other than these regulatory requirements, you know, obviously we have different models for doing asset management for the assets that we have, assets and equipment. And for the Santiago pump, I guess those are discovered through regular inspections. And then they just come up as things happen. Or do we have some kind of deterioration model that prompts us to do something with those? And I'm sorry, so many parts of my question. And lastly, it's GWRS. Do we still use Maximal? I seem to recall that when we first started with the initial GWRS, we used something called Maximal Asset Management Tool that helps us monitor thousands of different parts within the plants. Is that how we come up with these recommendations and, you know, helping us develop, you know, the budget for future years when it comes to these type of replacement projects?
To answer your question, we still use Maximo. It's as part of a computerized maintenance management system and an overall asset management strategy program. So yes, the Maximo program or CMMS program puts out regular, what we call preventative maintenance tasks, automatically generates work orders to all of the guys, both for GWRS and at our recharge operations up at Four Bay and Prado. And part of those include the Santiago pump station. So there's regular work orders that go out, things like checking the rotation on pumps, checking motor life, measuring, making sure that the motor has proper voltage and current. So part of that activity is what leads to some of these discoveries of failures, or at least signs of failure, and then leads us to put these pieces of equipment into the R&R program. Like last year, we had a rebuilding of a large vertical turbine pump because it was showing signs of bearing failure. So things like that are all help us to predict future maintenance and current maintenance requirements by using the Maximo system. So it's still very much a part of our everyday operational methods, both for GWRS and Four Bay. This one happened to be a combination, the Santiago pump station, of a normal maintenance showing that we were not getting full conductivity in the cables, and then over time noticing the cables starting to sag, but the pump station still being operational. And then at some point it sagged to the point where the termination started to pull out from the stanchions on shore, and that's when we decided to shut that particular pump down and start to implement a program or work with engineering on a possible R&R program to address.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate the excellent work that you and your staff do. Are there any other questions or comments for Mehul?
I don't see any hands raised.
Well,
Director Rowe.
Yes. my experience with FEMA, I learned a harsh lesson, is that if you have water control facilities with no records of maintenance, then FEMA will not reimburse the agency to restore the facility to pre-disaster function. It's, they have a program with Corps of Engineers that FEMA points people to. They should be in the Corps of Engineers Rehabilitation Inspection Program, otherwise known as RIP, where they come out, certify your facility, and then you do an annual checklist inspection to prove that you did look at your facility and noted whether there's any differences in this. And I encourage our district to basically try to apply this program to a lot of our facilities, so we basically show that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, doing what the Corps of Engineers does in maintaining facilities properly. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Director Rowe, for your comments. I sort of saw Mayho's head went north and south. Are we doing something to cover our collective end?
Yeah, I mean, the Maximo program is what allows us to keep detailed records on every preventative or corrective maintenance that's done on any piece of equipment. And in fact, as a good example, we have a lot of online analyzers in the GWRS that help control the process to ensure that we're making quality water and not missing anything. We actually list every single PM that we've done and CM that we've done and all those analyzers in the GWRS annual report that goes to DPW as an example. So we believe strongly in record keeping for our own purposes, but it also allows us in the future, if you go after grant funding or anything else where you have to show that the equipment's been maintained properly, it's all part of it, due diligence to make sure that you have good record keeping.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So if there are no other comments or questions, this item is informational. So I believe that staff has received some comments and from the directors, we're good with this one, right? Okay. So let's move on to the last item on our agenda. That's the monthly cash disbursements report.
Yes, and I believe this information is contained within the packet, Mr. Chairman, and if any directors have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. General Manager. So we will put all of the items on the consent calendar for our March 15th board meeting. Is that appropriate?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. So any director's announcements or reports at this point?
Director Yeo, I see a Joe Berg from MODAC has his hand raised.
Yes, let me, I'm sorry, I got two things going on here. I cannot see what you're seeing, but Mr. Berg, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Director Yeo. Joe Berg, Director of Water Use Efficiency for the Municipal Water District of Orange County. I do apologize. I was not able to raise my hand in time to speak to item four. And really what I wanted to convey is that MODOC really appreciates the opportunity to access that funding on behalf of the retail water agencies within the OCWD service area to assist them in measuring the dedicated irrigation meter areas to help them comply with the new water use efficiency framework. 100% of that funding is being used to directly offset the costs to the retail water agencies for that work. It is a meaningful amount and is helping those agencies quite substantially. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Berg, for your comments. Appreciate that. Okay, so let's go back to the director's announcements and reports. Anyone? Okay, Mr. General Manager?
Nothing to report.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. It is 8:37. We're adjourned until our next month meeting. Thank you very much, everyone.